Session number 22346, Reel 4.
Captain Riggs, Reel 4. You were saying, I think you
Yes, we were down at on this Dead Sea battalion training for January, February, and probably in the first few days of March. Mm-hmm. I was 21 years old on the 1st of March, and so we were having a great party in the Calais Hotel, which was the hotel at the northern end of the Dead Sea. Probably still is, as far as I know. And we'd had quite a party. Most of the battalion officers were there because Teddy Ablett and I, we were both about 21, so we decided to have a party. And there were two things of moment during that party, apart from the fact that we'd all had quite a lot to drink. What it was we drank, I can't even remember, but nothing too awful, I think. But there were some civilians there at the top end, British civilians at the top end of the lake there, and some of them were over in the corner of the hotel. And one of them got up and walked across to me, and he said, I gather it's your 21st birthday, is it? So I said, I looked at him with great suspicion, because we weren't used to civilians and not in uniform. I said, well, yes, actually. He said, well, look, over here is the Palestine Potash Company. They had salt pans at the top of the Dead Sea, and they flooded them and then closed them off like paddy fields, and it burnt off the moisture, and they ended up by bagging up pure potash, which was sold around for fertilizer and what have you. Whether it's still there or not, heaven knows, I wouldn't know. But he said, look, I'd like to give you, we, the group at here, we'd like to give you a present. I thought, oh God, now what's the catch now? And he said, well, I'm the, I happen to be this year the president of our local golf club down there on the Dead Sea. And we'd like to make you a life member, you and your friend. So I said, well, okay. I was unwinding a bit by this time, and I thought someone was going to take the Michael out of me in a big way. And he said, well, okay, I've got a membership card. And so there and then I was made a life member of the Sodom and Gomorrah Golf Club. But unfortunately, from then onwards, I'd lost my kit about three times, and that particular card had gone. So I'd love to have that framed on the wall, but it went. However, a little later on that very same evening, after we'd had all had a little more to drink, a dispatch rider ran up from battalion headquarters and came into the hotel. Anyway, normally didn't expect dispatch riders to come into hotels when officers were having a party. But he walked straight up to the adjutant and gave him a signal. And the signal was that the battalion had to be trained to move out of Jerusalem in 24 hours.
Very short notice.
On a war footing. Well, if we were slightly inebriated at the time, we were extremely sober in a matter of seconds. Tore back to, because we're still on a sort of semi-peacetime footing, you know, we had sort of mess furniture and, you know, and the sergeant's messes and the troops' messes, they had furniture and equipment which was really pulled out of Allenby Barracks to set us up down there. All that had to be got rid of. Much personal kit had to be packed up, and anyway, they had to get the whole of the battalion back to Jerusalem. And the road from Jerusalem even unto Jericho, as it says in the Bible, no doubt it's a dual carriageway something or other now that the Israelis have built, but it was a pretty rudimentary one-track road, very windy and steep, going down a couple of thousand feet or so over, I don't know, 15 miles, is it? Not many miles. But a bit of a do getting a battalion back up there into the barracks, getting guys get their sort of additional kit got rid of, and well, we just about made it. The vehicles went down to the railway down on the coastal plain somewhere. They set off for Egypt, and we got in a train in Jerusalem.
How did you actually move the guys? Did you march them back to Jerusalem, or did you get them?
No, we were We were ferried up there in, not in our own vehicles, but the RASC had vehicle companies all over the place, and no doubt they were summoned to turn up at our camp near the Dead Sea, the next morning at dawn, or wherever they'd come from. And we were bussed up to Jerusalem. There was a fair old bit of tearing around once we got into the barracks. I don't think we slept for 24 hours. And eventually they put us on a train, and we went down to Egypt.
What did you have to do with regard to your signals platoon in order to get them ready for this move?
Well, their actual equipment and stuff wasn't very, very difficult, because whether we still had the heliographs with us or not, I just can't remember. But we only had our field telephones and our cable. And, the motorcycles were all right. They went with the vehicles down to Tulkarm or wherever it was on the coastal plain and picked up the railway down there. And they went off down towards, down to Egypt, on a different train, I suppose. Anyway, we ended up in a ghastly place, which I shall mention more than once, called Qassassin, which was it's Qassassin.
What was so ghastly about Qassassin?
Well, it was a transit area for whole units. A parking area for whole units which were about to be deployed wherever, or had just come off ships at Suez, having gone round the Cape by this time. In fact, I remember the whole of the Tees and Tyneside division turning up there looking very pink and wheeling their bicycles across the desert, which of course they could never ride. The wonderful guys they were later on, but they were like fish out of water when we saw them. and we stayed there for a bit, and then...
What sort of facilities did this camp?
Well, it was a complete tented camp with EPIP tents, and that was about it, I think. We didn't have to put the structures up, they were there, and there were plots for battalions or gunner regiments or whatever. Who were dumped in there and sort of put together until they were told to go off and do something else. I don't think we did very much training there. We were probably only there a few days because we'd already been predestined to go to Lemnos, the island of Lemnos in the Aegean.
Did you know anything about where you were likely to be going when you were...
Well, we were given our instructions, yes, about this. We were to form the basic unit of a small composite force, some sappers and one or two RASC guys and things like that, to go to the island of Lemnos and to clear a marshy area there which would have been suitable for fighter aircraft. Now, Lemnos is in the mouth of the Dardanelles and not far from Salonika. It was about as far north in the Aegean as you can get. The Greek campaign had started. Although the Germans had not intervened at that stage, it was mainly Italians. And at the very early stages, we were doing rather well.
The Italians British, were being beaten off, weren't they?
They were being pushed up into Yugoslavia, which prompted the Germans to intervene, which they did later on with results that you all know about. And I suppose it was during that earlier phase that they thought, okay, well, we'll try and get an airfield very close to the mouth of the Dardanelles. In fact, we discovered it was the advance base for the Gallipoli landings. And indeed, the first thing we saw when we went ashore was a string of graves of from the 5th Battalion of the Bedfordshire Regiment, who were killed in the Gallipoli landings.
How did you get to the island?
Well, we were taken down to the dockside at Alexandria, and there were four Glenline merchant ships which were converted to with landing craft inboard.
Yes.
They were known as commando ships. Whether there was a Middle East commando at that time, I'm not sure, but I think there probably was. And we were put into one of these, the HMS Breconshire, she was.
But you hadn't done any amphibious training, had you?
None at all.
None at all.
None at all. But fortunately, we didn't have to go down any scrambling nets and swim for it. That'll come later in another context. And anyway, we set off. It was an RNVR crew which had taken over this ship. She would have been a 20,000-ton, not a very big merchant ship, that was on the regular liner trade, normally out from the UK to the Far East. But they'd been commandeered, or whatever the word was. There were four of them, the Glen Roy, the Glen Shield, the Glen Garry, and the Breconshire, all from this shipping line. And they were fitted up with smallish landing craft, which I suppose would have taken about a platoon each.
Landing craft assault.
That was probably a bit of an overstatement. They were rather rudimentary things, but they were powered.
Yes, that's what the landing craft assault was, essentially an open
that's
box,
right, yes.
With about 28 men.
With a flap at the front, maybe. Flap at the bows, I don't know.
Down, yes.
Yes, it must have had, because we had carriers with us.
Yes.
And which we did put ashore, and one or two other smaller vehicles too.
When did you got the carriers? When did they arrive?
No, I knew you were going to ask me that. We may have taken them over at Cassassine, because it was the first time we were really put onto any kind of proper sort of war footing.
Yes.
Sort of, you know. We had Bren guns at that stage, and presumably shed our Lewis guns at last. We were issued with Brens. We may have had the old half-inch anti-tank rifles.
The boys.
Yes. And maybe, probably a two-inch mortar, possibly, we may have acquired at that stage.
Had you had a chance to get familiar with the Bren gun and the two-inch mortar before you went off to Lemnos?
Probably we had guys in the battalion who'd been off on courses to the Middle East Small Arms School. There was one at Haifa, I think. There'd have been senior NCOs who would have done this mainly. And so probably we knew what they were when we were given them. Probably still in their boxes and covered in grease and shoved on board this ship. Known as Force Baldock.
Force Baldock.
And the reason for this, as we discovered later, well, we knew Baldock was in Hertfordshire. There was a place. And therefore, probably not a very good code name cover for a Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire regiment. But that was pure chance. Apparently, a staff officer somewhere in Egypt who cooked up the idea of setting us here said, well, we'd better give this little composite force a name. And he looked up on his wall, and there was a calendar for advertising a firm which sold stockings. And there used to be a kind of stocking, not nylons, I don't think, called Baldock. And so he said, right, we'll call it False Baldock. Little did he know, he was letting off our home territory at the same time. But, you know, this is the usual sort of camouflage and security shambles that went on in those days, of which another one in a moment or two. So we set off with HMS Breconshire, with a couple of destroyers. One was HMS Havoc, I remember, and we set off, and we came into Athens. Great secrecy, so they planted us alongside, straight opposite the German embassy. On the key side in the Piraeus.
The Piraeus, yes.
Apparently. But we were flying the Greek flag. We flew the Greek flag on this ship. However, we were there for a bit, and I suppose there must have been some sort of force headquarters or other for Greece at the time. Jumbo Wilson, I think, was commanding the Greek.
British Forces Greece, that would have been.
Yes. I suppose we must have got more detailed orders. We'd had an advance party fly in, I think, to just one or two guys, second in command and somebody, were flown into Athens, I think, to get some more detailed instructions. And I suppose they came aboard and we set sail for Lemnos.
Had you had any incidents on the way on your voyage to
Absolutely free of incidents at all. So we arrived on Mudros Bay in Lemnos, welcomed with open arms by the Greek islanders, of course. the head man was a retired Greek admiral, aged about 85 or something like that. Absolutely thrilled to bits to see a couple of destroyers in his harbour, or in his bay. Anyway, they put us all ashore. Quite a lot of stores, wire, you know, a certain amount of stores of that kind. Wire, no mines, I don't think, but a bit of tentage, perhaps. I just don't remember. And we were told to set up some kind of defensive setup there. The island was too big for one battalion, you know, so we fixed up ourselves in two or three strong points and went and had a look at this marsh. And the battalion intelligence officer and I used to get on motorcycles and go up all around the goat tracks, having a look to see what was where and so on. He'd come back and tell the CO all about the topography and whatever else. And eventually we settled the battalion down into some company locations.
Did you have maps of the
island? I suppose so, yes. I can't remember.
And that's why it was so necessary.
Might have had a town plan and not much else.
Do a topographical reconnaissance if you
we may have, the intelligence officer may have had to do something of that, yes, before the CO finally deployed the rifle companies to where he wanted them and fixed. The battalion headquarters was near, just outside the town somewhere. And I remember we were in a sort of stone house, rather like a large hut more than a house, and we all piled in there. And it was damn cold, I remember, for some reason or other. It was still northern Greece, and it was still March or so, early April. What we used to do then, of course, in Palestine, what we all got hold of were these sheepskin coats. Used to be able to pick your sheep while it was still alive, and somebody would slaughter the wretched thing and sort of half cure the coat and with the fleece on the inside, and they were pretty good for sleeping out in the cold. At least half of you was pretty warm.
top half
anyway. And so we had these, but they used to rot and fall to bits after a while because the curing of the skin was never all that wonderful. In fact, the MOs used to wonder about whether we might pick up anthrax or something like that, but fortunately, I don't think that ever happened. But we used to huddle up in this at night time. Because the other thing that used to happen there was we had a landline to Athens, to force headquarters. Well, this time we had got some ciphers, and don't ask me what they were because I can't remember. But it was sort of five-letter codes, and how one encoded and decoded, I don't know. But our signallers used to have to take this by Morse. It was a terrible submarine cable, and it used to be terribly corrupt, the messages we got, and usually they reckon they wanted to start sending it about 11 o'clock at night.
Yes.
So usually the intelligence officer and I were up all night, almost every night, trying to get these in. There were two or three of us trying to write down these more signals so that we could try to discorrupt them a bit once we got them onto paper.
Yes.
No, the decoding came later. Then the intelligence officer, he was the one with the ciphers. So he and I used to sit down and then try to make some sense out of all this. What they had to, they really only wanted a sort of situation rep from us. And for, I don't know how long we were there, probably for about 3 to 4 weeks, no more. So most of the time we were saying no, and nothing to report, you know, and whatever. But then the Germans, by this time, had entered northern Greece through Yugoslavia, and they were starting to push the guys southwards down the mainland Greece. And indeed, they were a good way south of us. And although, again, we never knew this, but one day a German aircraft flew over us. And we knew stuff in it with a few bits and things. He would probably see us as plain as could be because we weren't very well camouflaged, I'm sure. And probably somebody told them that we were there. And so we just reported this. He flew over us, and another one flew over us the next day. So we said, okay, we're going to get bombed. In fact, we weren't, but maybe they hadn't got much in the way of bombing to do that was spare from bombing around on the mainland anyway.
Tell me, Greece. What sort of, you said you got strong points. How are they actually set up? And
I can't remember.
You can't remember the layout.
I wasn't really directly involved with it, you know. But the companies would have been told to dig themselves in somewhere.
Company areas.
Company areas, probably, yes.
Where was the headquarters, the battalion headquarters? Hmm? Where was the battalion headquarters?
Well, it was in a stone hut near the town, Mudros. There was only one town, I think, in Lemnos.
Was it?
In Mudros, because that was where the bay was, the anchorage for their fishing boats and whatever.
How far away was it from the rifle companies? Were they close in, or were they dotted about across the?
I can't even remember quite well where they were located. There was probably one in near the battalion headquarters of the town area, but the others could very well have been put out nearer to where the airfield was, which I remember was out on the northeast side of the island somewhere. It was a bit of flat area which would have taken a hurricane or a Spitfire, not much else perhaps.
Did you see any friendly aircraft?
No.
So they didn't come in and use the airstrip?
No. It was a bit of a crackpot notion by the sound of things that it was not on. Once the Germans started pushing us back down to the south, there was no basis for having fighters as far forward as that anyway, and there would have been some in Crete, no doubt, at that time. However, we suddenly got the orders one night to prepare to embark in 24 hours. Destroy your guns and vehicles, because they were not, they couldn't be embarked. So we pushed perfectly good trucks and carriers into the sea. Mm. We pushed them into the sea. And we loaded up a few kikes, which we let the locals have, with things like barbed wire and sandbags and things like that, in case some partisans or somebody later on might have had some use for them, which probably they wouldn't. But anything like that we couldn't take. And quite a lot of food and stores we had with us. And so we embarked the battalion on the Glen Roy came up. She was another one of these, I think it was the Glen Roy, who took us back to Egypt.
You said something about being ordered to destroy your guns. Did you do that? I thought you only had your infantry weapons.
Well, no, Bren guns and things, of course, we'd have taken back on board with us. Incidentally, they jammed.
Did they?
Mm. We were trying to zero them on our outward voyage, and they were brand new, straight out of a factory somewhere, and once we cleaned them up and so on and started zeroing them on the ship, the mechanisms jammed. They were too tight. Once they got warm, they stuck. Mm. Unusual, because the Bren gun would operate anywhere in the world.
They were
wonderful. You'd bury them in sand and they'd still fire. Mm. But at any rate, that was just rather by the by.
Did you have anything larger then? Because
no, I don't think we did. So I mean, if we had a 2-inch mortar, we could have taken that with us.
Of course.
Anything that was man portable, we could take. Mm. But otherwise, anything heavier, like vehicles, so that would require to be lifted in, you know, on davits or anything like that. We just had to destroy it. We just push them into the sea. And luckily, we were not harassed by the Luftwaffe. And also, luckily, we were taken all the way back to Alexandria, and not landed in Crete or in southern Greece on the way. So we didn't have to go through this awful business of the evacuation of Crete and of the Crete battle, where the brigade we joined later on were the 14th Infantry Brigade, which at that time had the 2nd Black Watch, 2nd York and Lancasters, and I think the 2nd Battalion of the Welsh Regiment. And back we went to the dreaded Cassassine camp. But shortly afterwards, they put us into Mustafa barracks in Alexandria, which was the garrison barracks there, peacetime barracks. And while we were there, we were driven out of Greece, and indeed driven out of Crete. At one stage, while we were in Alexandria, we were prepared for embarkation to go to Crete to reinforce it. A battalion, that battalion of the Queen's, were at sea. Is that true? Did you pick that up from your on that other tape? You might have done. It may not have been that same battalion, but it probably was. But they got turned round halfway to Crete. It was decided by this time the Germans had put the whole of their airborne forces onto Crete, as you know. And when they'd captured that Malemi airfield, the Black Watch was still holding out at Heraklion, I understood. But once they'd got Malemi airfield and could start to crash land gliders and get men ashore, I think everybody decided that Crete was untenable. As it was, it cost the Navy hugely, as no doubt you would know. Evacuating Greece and then evacuating Crete, they lost cruisers and destroyers by the bucket load, as you know. That was the Kelly action was part of that. The Duke of York is still there, I expect, beached on the south side of Crete. Anyway, out came that brigade, what was left of it. And our job then was to help with the reception process of all the troops being brought back from Crete.
What did that entail doing in practice?
Well, I'm going to tell you. First of all, I remember all the officers were given motorcycles, we were given liaison jobs with the local regional headquarters in Alexandria to report what was in destroyers and cruisers when they came in, and because they had no idea who was going to be on what ship, and so they had no idea how many vehicles to send down to take the guys away, which units were involved, and so on. And we had to go tearing back. We did this for two or three weeks, I suppose, in the end. Some of them were in a frightful mess. For instance, HMS Orion, which was a fairly new cruiser at the time, I saw her coming into the harbour, and she came alongside this quayside where I was there as a liaison job, and her two forward guns, which were probably 8-inch, they were quite big, were just bent up like bits of old lead piping, upwards, you know, just like that. A Stuka had put a bomb on the deck straight between them, but another Stuka had put another bomb through the deck, which burst in the mess decks below, which had what was left of the Black Watch. And it was a really messy business getting these guys out of Crete, apart from those that were sunk on the way. And, well, the Navy will have to tell you about that, but the casualties amongst the Navy, amongst the ships and so on, was quite substantial. Crete was beyond the range of air cover. And so, it was just a turkey shoot for the Stukas and things, who by that time presumably could use the airfields, the Malemi airfields and what have you, in Crete. And it was a pretty dreadful business, that evacuation. And indeed, later on, that we were asked for volunteers to go and help to try to clean up those mess decks. And what we were doing was taking bits of people up, and we were literally throwing the pieces off the outboard side from the quay into barges, and they took the scraps out and just dumped them in the sea. There was no other way of dealing with it. So hopefully no widows, and there won't be many widows anyway, could hear this little account, but that was the only way we could get the ships cleaned up.
Did you get volunteers?
Yes, we did. The guys were great. And doing something similar on another occasion, which I will mention again later on. No, they were wonderful from that point of view. They were really, really good guys. And it was a pretty horrible job. It was stinking hot. You know, it was 10 minutes in there and back out with a mug of tea out into some fresh air. And sickening, too. Gas masks we put on them, and then they couldn't wear them because it was just too